This is a briefing, Lands 2020, and Julie, I'll turn it over. Or Cynthia, whoever.
Well, good morning, Chair and Commissioners. I'm Cynthia Wilkerson, the newly hired Lands Division Manager, and with me, Julie Sandberg, head of our real estate shop. And we're pleased to be talking with you today about the Lands 2020 proposals. I did just want to make a brief comment in connection to the past conversations, and certainly me as incoming and newly hired Lands Division Manager want to make it really, really clear that the conversation about some reference to the our lands, our rules approach is not at all a philosophy that I embrace, and that I am deeply committed to working with people of the state of Washington in the way that we manage our lands on their behalf. So I just wanted to make that really clear. I really appreciate the conversation and had some good conversations with the folks that are now gone. And I told them that same thing as well, and looking forward to me just being more familiar with them and their needs and how we meet the needs of their constituents across the state. Thank you. We're here for our annual conversation about Lands 2020, and this is really, really early in the process where we're just thinking about potentially having conversations about going to try and find some money for new land acquisitions. And this is one of those things that sometimes it's hard for the public and for others to wrap their heads around how this process works, because it is fairly complex and lengthy in from sort of concept to actual closing of a property. And then, of course, there's a whole nother life in perpetuity that we have a commitment to these lands into the future. So pleased to be here with you today and understand that context, that this is just a sliver of the process and the work that we're doing on land acquisition throughout the state. Before we jump in, I also do really want to recognize all of the work from staff that goes into this body of work. You have Julie and I sitting before you today, but all of these projects represent a ton of hours of work and relationships and discussions, both in the regions with the sponsors on the ground that are looking at these opportunities and needs, and our regional management teams, our regional program managers, our regional directors, the lands agents that we have in each region. And I also in particular wanted to highlight the work of two staff, Lisa Kaufman in our real estate shop, who does just stellar work on this. And, you know, the PowerPoint is really her work, not Julie and I's work. And she keeps us all going and coordinated on this. And also wanted to highlight the work of Craig Bartlett from Public Affairs, who really did help us upgrade the way that we the website is for public comments this time around, and just trying to be a bit more conscious about being clear about our process and what this piece is in the process, and have people have good access to this work. And we've seen some good public comment and engagement as a result, I think. So with that, so this is Lands 2020. It is the suite of projects that in the last, this year's suite of projects that staff have brought forward for consideration for us to commit to in the future pursuing land ownership of. It's a fairly convoluted statement, but that's where it is. So we start off with the concept of, so why? Why are we doing this? Why does a department buy land? Well, we buy land because it's connected to our mission. And when it's important to deliver our mission in order to protect, restore, and enhance fish and wildlife and their habitats, and when land ownership is critical to that, and also to provide sustainable and wildlife-related recreational opportunities. So those are the two pillars of why we buy land, and the management pillars associated. In working through land acquisition, we operate on a set of principles, and it's always good to remind ourselves of those. So one of the first things we do is evaluate if acquisition is the best conservation alternative. There are several conservation tools in our toolbox, including working with private landowners, including regulation, and land ownership and management in perpetuity is one of those options. So we say, does it make sense for us to own it? Or for it to be owned in a public kind of sphere. And then we talk about optimizing or pursuing and using partnerships. So not only do we ask the question of, is land ownership the right tool for this piece of land? We also ask, does it make sense for DFW to be that landowner? Does it meet match up with our mission in a way that makes sense? Does it make sense for the local community for that to be the future of those lands? So we work with partners, and Ms. Krakauer had some questions, and we're following up with that as well in terms of the land trust community. We absolutely work with the land trust community, as well as folks like Ducks Unlimited and Trout Unlimited and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, TNC, and a whole slew of partners. And in those conversations, sometimes we will pursue an acquisition. Sometimes our partners will pursue an acquisition. Sometimes a different state agency will pursue an acquisition. Then we clearly are prioritizing lands that are ecologically or socially important. So is it going to be critical winter range for deer or elk? Is it going to be a stopover for waterfowl? Is it going to be critical habitat for a listed threatened or endangered species? You know, all of those kinds of questions. And then socially important, is it provide some kind of recreational opportunity that is limited and that we're in need of? Or some other importance that are in line with our mission that are needed and demanded by the communities out there. So the conversation about, there's need for more dog training places, you know, Commissioner Wecker asked, so are we looking at that in the way we're looking at land transactions? Are we looking for more places for that activity? Well, certainly when we have a suite of opportunities, those would be the kind of questions that we're asking ourselves. We clearly need to be evaluating the long-term management value. How expensive is it going to be to maintain the values that we're purchasing those lands for into the future? And do we have the values for that? I'm not sure there's some chuckling going on. But who knew I was being comical? I like the smiles. I'm enjoying it. And so, you know, I'm coming in as land manager, thinking about, okay, how much land do we get to manage our lands, and how does that affect our ability to sustain into the future, the ability to provide the values on these lands. We certainly do consider and are looking for public access and recreation values and needs having to do with those lands, and we ask ourselves those questions. We also ask ourselves questions about local community value. Does this fit within, does DFW ownership fit within the local community vision for what's going on in this place? Really, the way I talk about it is our land base and the way that we provide the resources and opportunities on them really is different depending on where you are in the state, and finding ways to meet both the needs of the land and the fish and the wildlife and the people in those places. So all of these things are actually part of our Lands 2020 application. Yeah, absolutely.
Bullets that you put up there, are these bullets that you use internally in the preliminary stages, yes, of evaluation, or yes, do you engage any stakeholders in this? And if so, at what point?
Very good question. Thank you. The bullets are they are represented in the Lands 2020 application, and a piece of that is also outreach. And so it's required at this early stage to go out and have conversations with stakeholders and local communities and county commissioners. So that starts from the beginning.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate that. All right. The other big piece of the equation is, where does the money come from? And we want to make it really clear that our major funding sources are usually almost entirely grant-funded. We have historically used a bit more Pittman-Robertson funds than we have of recent years due to budget constraints. So in terms of the conversation about DFW and state wildlife state land funding, all of those things, really we get the money to buy these lands from grant sources predominantly from the Recreation and Conservation Office and the Fish and Wildlife Service. And there's various different pots of money from those places. And what's important to understand is that there are requirements associated with these monies. And some of them are specifically having to do with the conservation value and the consistency with specific species needs, like the critical habitat sections of the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program, or like the Section 6 funds from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Again, Pittman-Robertson funds would be more focused on the hunting and fishing values of those lands. So we have to remember that when we're trying to match up an opportunity with a funding source and then the management of those lands after they've been purchased.
Just a question on the timing of that. So if we identify property X and then we would apply to Fish and Wildlife, given the quality of property X, mm-hmm. and then they have a reviewing process that...
Yeah, they have a ranking process. All of these have different processes, but the Section 6 has a ranking process, so we actually rank the projects with DNR also puts in projects every year, so we rank those with the Fish and Wildlife Service according to their criteria. That goes back into the federal conversation, and the money gets allotted to the various regions of the Fish and Wildlife Service, and then that gets carved up.
So our request would go to D.C. or to a regional office?
Both.
Simultaneously?
It goes from one to the other. Okay. It goes to the regional office, then to D.C., and then the money comes
if
back.
If it gets approved at the regional level,
yes.
It goes to and headquarters.
And the money comes back, and the region doles it out according to.
Okay. Yeah. I think I know, but I want to ask the question anyway. The last item, Pittman-Robertson, can you speak a little bit of how those funds are generated, just to refresh my memory?
So those are from funds from excise taxes, from hunting, ammunition and guns and
archery
things.
Too.
Yes. So at the federal level, and at the federal level on federal lands, and then it's doled out according to an equation per state.
Okay, thank you.
And is that equation based on license sales?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I'm hearing. I'm hearing.
Yes, and square miles.
Hunter numbers in square miles. Thank you.
So, Texas would get the most.
Texas and Alaska.
California get large chunks.
Jim, what's the name of the one that generates funds from tackle sales?
Dingle Johnson.
Dingle Johnson. Okay, thank you.
And then there's another called Wallop Bro that are all within the federal aid program. Wallop Bro is taxes on fuel used for boating, and so it's generally for boating access. Dingle Johnson is excise tax on fishing tackle, and so it's used mostly for recreational fishing. And then Pittman-Robertson is excise taxes on shooting and hunting and archery. And so it can be spent, it has components for hunter education as well as for wildlife management, and you can use it for land acquisition.
Could Pittman-Robertson be robbed?
There are restrictions, actually, at a couple of different levels. It's pretty protected within the federal budgets, but we also have laws within our states that the legislature cannot divert license dollars to things outside of sports or conservation uses, and if that should happen, then the federal government can withhold our excise tax dollars, Pittman-Robertson's dollars. So it's very interesting.
Could we get at some point a cheat sheet that talks about those three funding sources and where and how it's derived? So point. I keep hearing them, but I've never seen a point of reference of what they're connected to, and I'd like to be able to...
Yeah, that would be a really interesting topic for the commission, I think. Our federal portion of our budget is very complicated, and we could talk about those as well as other things.
Yeah,
we just prepared a large package of information for Senator Pearson, who is interested in the federal
portion. And I think part of that is, of all of these various funds, how many can be robbed?
Okay.
Because I think anything that is robbable will possibly be robbed.
And as well as in the robbing category, I'm interested in whether when these regions consider our applications, it goes to the feds and comes back, does the money actually accompany those or not? What happens to the excise tax itself until it is distributed?
I don't know the answer to that.
I wanted that as part of the briefing.
Right.
Oh, okay.
That is in a pot somewhere.
Right.
There you go, Joe.
It's part of the Fish and Wildlife Service. It'll be a great or interesting topic, I think.
Thank you.
All right. So just again to emphasize the values that we're looking for when we're looking at land acquisitions, we're looking for grounding these in the landscape context and the values at the landscape level that are needed, again, by the place and by the people and by the wildlife. We're looking for strengthening the portfolio with regards to the values for outdoor recreation. We're also looking to maintain and enhance the ability of working lands to continue to contribute to landscape values for our mission. Of course, we're looking at the value of these lands for species across the board, and we're looking to engage and support rural economies in the way that these lands are contributing to the values that the people who live there and the people who visit there come to experience. So that's the kind of overarching bits, and then Julie's going to take you through more details on the process, some of which you see, I think, every time there's a land acquisition project that's being finalized, and then through the 12 projects that we have in front of us currently.
Thanks. I'm Julie Sandberg, manager of the Real Estate Services section. Typically, you see me come before the commission on a monthly basis with something that's at the very end of this lengthy process. Today, we're at the other end of the chute, trying to figure out what we want to approach over the coming years. If someone wants to do business with the state of Washington, they need to be very patient, whether it's our agency or another one, because most of us have no ready source of funding. It's a matter of applying for grants, and there's a lot of rigor in the process for us, both internally as well as once we get to the funding and applying for grants. And then you're exhausted, and then you get to start in and do a transaction process and all your due diligence. So where we're at today is focusing on this Lands 2020 early in the process. Getting through this briefing today, I want to be very clear, it's a briefing, it's not a decision-making, so we're going to move pretty quickly through a description of these 12 projects because they are fairly early. The regions have done their due diligence, they've brought us these thorough applications, they've been reviewed six ways to Sunday internally to make sure it meets all of our principles and our values, and they've been put before the executive management team. As part of our procedure that we developed several years ago, we wanted to be very open and provide the public several opportunities to be aware of our vision for the future in terms of land management. We posted these 12 to our agency website a month ago and asked for public comment. We learned this is probably the third year that we've been really diligent about getting them out there with a news release saying, if you're interested in what we're thinking about purchasing in the future, feel free to go make a public comment. Most of the time, people are not shy about making public comments. So I'll share with you today some of the comments that we received on these proposals. But in setting the context, we redid, thanks to our public affairs folks, that entry page that talks about why we're acquiring land and explains this step process that you're familiar with, that it's very lengthy. We have an internal Lands 2020, and trying to make it clear that that news release a month ago was saying, here's your early peek at where we think we want to go in the future. So with that, I'll start off on our proposals. We have 12. They touch every region of our state. The projects listing here, there's usually 2 to 4 per region. And I'm going to go through them fairly quickly. If you have questions, feel free to interrupt. In Region 1, just north of Spokane, we have an in-holding that's owned by Department of Natural Resources. They actually approached us a year ago and said, hey, if you want to get rid of that property, we'll include it in our trust land transfer program where they get money from the legislature that compensates the trust and the new owner gets the property. And the new owner is usually a public agency, so it's just going between public agencies. However, they really limited their list this year, and the funding for it wasn't going to be trust land transfer. Because we have our internal process, we said we've already started it. Why don't we keep going? And in the future, if there's an opportunity that comes up to remove this in-holding, we'd really like to take advantage of that. Again, this is a great way to take care of some management efficiency and not have an in-holding. It's some timbered property. DNR has a different view of how they manage timber than we do. The Goat Mountain Road property in I'm in Columbia County. Again, this is an edge holding. It touches on our wildlife area in two places. It's a dirt track road that gets into the property for the private landowner and crosses through our wildlife area. It would be nice to eliminate this edge holding and continue with that nice corridor that benefits a number of species, including mule deer, bighorn sheep, and golden eagles. In Douglas County, the brown that you see here is our freshest wildlife area. It's the wonderful Big Bend wildlife area to protect our sharp-tailed grouse. The red inholdings, again, are DNR properties. They also... And we talked to them about putting them on their trust land transfer list. They didn't make that list, but we proceeded to put them through our internal process. They'll sit on a shelf until some funding becomes available. And again, you think your two state agencies, what's the big deal? It really is a big deal. Having come from DNR, we have distinct missions and management. We have different funding sources for our O&M. In some cases, we will lease DNR property so that we can manage it consistently with our values, and I believe we're currently leasing 2 of these properties. But again, we just purchased the wildlife area. In Okanagan County, there is a very large property, and I apologize, up in the upper left is that very shaded out portion that tells you the acreage in these properties. This is a large conservation easement that would be acquired by one of our partners, the Metal Land Conservancy. Although it looks like, gee, it would just expand your wildlife area, why don't you go after it? We look at, again, the economic and social factors, and in Okanagan County, we're not buying land at this time, but there's a real interest by our partners to conserve it. They've approached the landowner and agreed that they would put a conservation easement to buy off the development values, which would continue to keep this amazing shrub steppe intact. It also has one of the last sharp-tailed grouse leks in the Metow watershed, so it's very important. The pass-through funding simply means the land trust can't go to that funding source. It'd be U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The funding only comes to a state agency. We are allowed, though, to pass it through to the land trust, but it's still, we have responsibilities, so we have to give serious thought to, do we want to help manage this process? In Yakima County, we're continuing to try to expand this landscape that would provide habitat critical shrub steppe again, which is one of our priority habitats. It also contains oak woodland. A river runs through this property. The Cowichi Creek, there's 6 miles of in-stream habitat on this property. Moving up to Skagit County, the state park has gone through a lengthy process in the last couple of years as their budget has become very restricted, and they've taken a hard look at properties they own that are not part of their long-term vision for an existing park or any time in the future. This is one of them, Rockport State Park. The parcel just, I believe, to the east of this is owned by State Parks, but they have this large old-growth parcel that is sitting there. They consider it surplus. They want to transfer it to another state agency. There are strings on the property. And some of the comments weren't shy about telling us some of the history of the property. We weren't clear on our website that this would be a no-cost transfer to us from State Parks. They're not looking to make money from us because they received the property and it has grant funding strings. So it would be a no-cost transfer to us from State Park. Also in Skagit County, there's a smaller parcel that would have great significance partnering with Skagit County to restore salmon habitat. It's also adjacent to one of our water access sites. In Lewis County, just west of Morton is the proposed Tilton State Park, again, a property that State Parks has declared surplus to them. It's adjacent to some land they own, but this isn't part of their long-term vision to expand State Parks opportunities in this area, so they're offering it to us. And actually, our fish program would see this as a great opportunity to have a release site for salmon and steelhead. The property in the area we currently manage on behalf of Tacoma Public Utilities, so they're also looking into working with State Parks on this property. So it's early, not sure where that one will end up. In Grays Harbor County, we have an opportunity, a number of interested landowners in expanding our wildlife area to restore salmon, increase some waterfowl hunting opportunities, and just basically add some more floodplain property into our portfolio. Just south of here, there are a number of scattered properties that our partners have identified, and our partners being U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, looking at threatened and endangered species, this little critter looking eye to eye at you. There are a number of scattered parcels that currently contain habitat for the Oregon spotted frog. This is another opportunity to pass through funding to one of our partners where they would hold the conservation easement on these small parcels. The South Sound Prairies is a very large, intact, single-owner property that has some diversity on it. It has, I understand, a small, like, 27-head elk herd on it. It has some forested property. It has some prairie that's in need of restoration, but also contains some unique species. And again, it's in single ownership. It'd be a large property that would take a phased approach for funding. This is a real good news story. We're hearing a lot of comments on Wentworth Lake up in the Olympic Peninsula. It's actually northwest of the town of Forks. It's a situation where there was access to this lake. Our fish program was planting it for rainbow. It's the only rainbow-planted lake in that area, in that whole peninsula. The private landowner, the timber companies in the area, closed off access to that lake. And the landowner came to us and said, I'll donate to you a little 1.5 acre if you'd accept it, and that would provide us access to get in and continue planting this lake. So the public comment portion of this was, again, a month of posting on our website and asking for public comments based on the little exposure that the public could see to these properties. Again, mindful that we've gone through the lengthy 2020 process, our regions have reached out to the county commissioners and at least informed them that we're anticipating pursuing funding for these properties, that it's early on. We have absolutely talked to the landowner. We would never put something up here if we hadn't spoken to a landowner and had someone that indicated interest in working with us on our process. We had nearly 50 comments this year, and the bulk of them were in support for a variety of reasons. A lot of them wanted access for hunting, for fishing, for wildlife viewing, for birding. And then we had a cluster of comments about Wentworth Lake. Let's continue to give us access for that rainbow trout. and a comment on, we like what you're doing in Okanagan County. You're protecting the conservation necessary on that property through an easement, but you're retaining it in private ownership. Some of the concerns were expressed, again, that the funding sources weren't clear. They didn't know where we were going to apply for money. But it's too early. We don't know specifically which grant we're going to go after for these. And as well, what was the deal with state parks? We weren't clear that those were no-cost transfers from state parks. The access impacts to adjacent landowners questioned, I can't tell from your map, it looks like you're buying my property. So had to get back to that person and say, no, we can't tell you who the name of the person is, but it's not yours. So relax. The access impacts, some of them were in the Cowichi where we're potentially buying a large area of land that still has private ownership around it, and those folks were a little nervous. Maybe because they bought their land without legal access, and they're just, by the generosity of their neighbors, crossing into it. So that generates different issues. So by and large, the comments we received were positive, but there are a number of other opportunities for the public to become aware of this. We work with RCO's Habitat and Recreation Lands Forum, where we work with other state agencies to share the different properties we're going after, so we're not bumping into each other. But again, we've had those conversations early on as well. Where do we go from here? We present this nice package with a ribbon to the director and ask for his approval to now go to apply for funds. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, we can apply for funds annually. We already submitted three properties a month ago, in the last couple of weeks, and that'll go into the regional with all the other states. They'll package it up, and it'll go to the federal level to compete against other states. The WWRP grants are every 2 years, so we kind of catch our breath this spring, get a new, hopefully new group of funding in for our older projects that are sitting with the legislature, and next spring we'll put our energy into the next round of WWRP grants. Once we've applied for the funding, if we get the funds, there's a lot of ifs in this thing, then we work to finalize our acquisitions. And there's, as you are aware, a ton of work between getting the money and bringing it to you for approval. So with that, I'd be glad to entertain questions.
Thank you, Julie. Always very informative.
Nicely done. I had a little conversation with Cynthia before she presented about the problem we were discussing with the dog training enthusiasts about looking for other properties to acquire. And my thought was that in recent years, most of the lands acquisitions that we've done have been driven by a desire to provide habitat for biological diversity, and because that's just the nature of a lot of our funding sources. But I suggested that we might want to focus our efforts on PR dollars towards problems like the dog trainers want us to solve, problems, the needs for lands for hunting, fishing, the consumptive users, because that's going to go over better with the new federal administration, I think. That's common ground with them. So I see this as a pretty modest list as they've been presented over the years. A lot of these are transactions from other agencies, not private parties. We've been trained in a sense that going for a lot of different acquisitions of private lands is just not very popular these days. And at the same time, a lot of our stakeholders do see the importance of public lands for consumptive users. So we've got to figure out how to do both of those at the same time, I think, and get strategic about focusing PR dollar requests towards serving the hunters and fishers. Hunters, I guess, would have to be. And I know that in past years, one of the big conflicts has been between the fish restoration community and the waterfowl enthusiasts, the hunters, because as Puget Sound has focused more on restoring saltwater marshes, and breaching dikes and turning them from freshwater to saltwater, it has driven out a lot of the waterfowl hunters. And they need, we've been promising them alternatives, but so the question is, how do the regions establish their priorities? We know that in Region 5, that's been a priority for a while to find new places for the waterfowl hunters. How do we do that? And how do we find lands for them and generate that those proposals?
So the regions actually are on the ground. They hear from these folks.
Yeah.
Again, when we start to work on a transaction, it has to be a willing seller and a willing buyer. And we can go try to find areas we'd like to expand into, but unless there's a willing seller, I mean, it's you have to be rather delicate. But if you've got a group of folks that are saying, we'll be your eyes and ears out there, we'll let you know if there's property available, that's a big help. But it, as you say, it starts at the region. They know the pressures they're under, but there's also our interactions with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, if there's a particular species that is in our state and unique and we've got that kind of pressure about, we expect to see you apply for a grant, you know, to protect this species. But the inquiries come from everywhere. I'd like to address the dog training for just a moment. Long ago and far away, we didn't have the population pressures, and the dog training occurred and nobody bothered them. And it's with all this population pressure, whether it's a dog off leash that's not there for training, or it's the trash dumpers or whatever it is, it's that population impact. Every agency has a niche, and our niche is more rural properties to protect habitat, but we also apply for grants to get a boating access, so a very specific recreational use. Off the top, I don't know of any grants that are out there specifically to offer land for dog training. It's land is pricey, and as you know, in Western Washington, it doesn't come cheap. Mm-hmm. So we would be glad to work with our constituents, and if that's a need, is that our niche, or is it someone else's niche to find that property?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had one other kind of crazy thought as you were talking about the conservation easements as a tool. I was starting to fantasize about recreation easements. And in the area that I live in, you know, as timberlands, industrial timberlands have been closed off, it has really changed the nature of hunting. You know, you see all these trucks parked outside the gates that are now closed virtually everywhere in Pacific County. There's only a few roads that go up into the woods that are open, DNR lands. But so it's really changed everything and made for, you know, maybe some improvements in the experience and unfortunate declines in the experience. But I thought, would it be possible for us to raise money to buy access on a greater scale in industrial timberlands, and you know, could you conceive of Weyerhaeuser or Hancock opening up their lands if we paid them enough money? Just a thought. And a recreation easement instead of conservation easement.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wecker, great questions, and certainly some of the RCO grants and others have a focus on different types of recreation. Mm-hmm. But specific to hunting recreation, I just as a reminder, as part of our Wild Future effort, we heard a lot from the public about this very need and this concern. And so as we launched our proposals for fee increases, the largest piece of what we proposed in the hunting package was that additional funds, if we could garner them, would be put to dealing with the recreational access component. And it was our hope that we could utilize those funds to do exactly the things that you're asking about. We also partnered that or paired it up with a landowner recreational liability immunity bill, which is actually having great traction right now across the street. And the concept there would be to, one, make landowners feel more comfortable allowing for recreational access. And the piece that we really clarified in that is that they would maintain their immunity even if they took a conservation type and access agreement from the agency. So they could receive monies from our agency and still retain that immunity clause. So that's still working its way through its system. And even if we don't end up with the fees on the hunting side to really pursue or grow the recreational conservation easement component this year, other funds might be made available at some time from whatever fund source, and we think it'll be supported by that immunity bill. So your question is right on target, and it's been not only a focus of ours, but a focus of what we've heard from our publics around the state, and we certainly are doing what we can to look for increased opportunity there.
I think it makes sense because a lot of the reasons they shut down the lands had to do with litter, vandalism, theft, and the fact that they couldn't enforce.
That's correct, and I neglected to include part of the fee increase was to also add some enforcement officers, and the purpose would have been very specifically to provide that enforcement coverage. We've had some positive conversations with Timberlands that, you know, certainly the financial incentive that they have from the current system is working pretty well for them, but things like the immunity, some ability to enter into an agreement with us that would provide some level of funding and some certainty of enforcement and protection would be of interest. And, of course, that's a long ways from a done deal. But I do feel like there's potential for that, and we continue to look for those options.
We'll take one last question because of time. We're running
out. Okay. And just to speak to what Miranda's talking about, in 13, we will be dealing with a bunch of those where they trade elk permits for land access. And there, again, it isn't a lot of out-of-pocket. And I know with one in my area, with a friend of mine that has it, they get a lot of hunting out of that deal with no money actually going out the door. So.
Can you hear me? Chair and Commissioner Wecker, I just wanted to also address the earlier part of your sort of comment question there about the PR funds, and just remind us that the RCO funds do allow for critical habitat for game species. So mule deer is one of the biggest species that we've utilized as a source for land acquisition. So in particular, in recent times, the Big Bend Wildlife Area was targeted, in fact, for that as well. And Douglas County commissioners came to us asking for us to find a way to purchase those lands, and we've heard a lot of good things from the hunting community about that because they're surrounded by private hunting opportunities, and you know, paying thousands of dollars for that same opportunity that we're now providing on that wildlife area, and the Simcoe Mountains purchase down in Klickitat County as well is timberlands looking to, and now we've begun several phases of that property to secure public access for hunting there as well. And in the review in the legislature last year of the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program, one of the things that we got enacted was adding language into the critical habitat section that gives you more points for projects that allow for multiple benefits. So if there is a working land component or a recreation component in those critical habitat projects, they score higher.
Very informative and good idea. Look forward to